Hello, this is Dr. Nicholas Hedberg, and today we'll be mapping infection and autoimmunity on the 15-minute matrix.
Welcome to the 15-minute matrix. I'm Andrea Nakayama, functional medicine nutritionist and your host. This is the podcast that brings you bite-sized insights and lessons on how to use the most important tool in functional medicine and functional nutrition. Today on the 15-Minute Matrix, I'll be in discussion with Dr. Nicholas Hedberg. Dr. Hedberg is a board-certified chiropractic internist, and he is board-certified in nutrition by the American Clinical Board of Nutrition. Dr. Hedberg is the founder of the Immune Restoration Center located in Asheville, North Carolina, where he treats patients worldwide with a variety of health problems. He's also the founder of the Hedberg Institute, an online functional medicine education platform for practitioners of all types who want to build an effective and successful international practice. Dr. Hedberg is an avid writer, researcher, and speaker, and the author of the new book, The Complete Thyroid Health and Diet Guide. Let's dive into this complex connection between infection and autoimmunity. Welcome, Dr. Hedberg. I'm really looking forward to talking about this subject with you.
Thanks for having me on, Andrea.
When we think about autoimmunity, most of us are primed to consider that an infection is at play, but I find that there's a lot of confusion even around the term infection. So can you presence for us what you mean by infection?
Right. Well, specifically, it would be a viral, bacterial, or a parasitic. Now, you know, dysbiosis in the gut or yeast overgrowth, we wouldn't really classify those as an infection, but definitely the other three.
It could be something that is impacting the GI system in addition to an immune or inflammatory imbalance.
Yes, that's exactly right. So viruses, bacteria, yeast, parasites, those can either be inside the gut or outside of the gut and affect the immune system.
And when we think about the what I call the story section of the functional nutrition matrix, so the ATMs, the area on the left side of the matrix, do you see these infections as triggers for autoimmune conditions, or do they also work as mediators for the expression of the signs and symptoms related to the autoimmune condition?
Definitely both scenarios are possible. We will see clear infections immediately before the autoimmunity. So just a quick example, there are many papers out there that show mononucleosis, which is caused by the Epstein-Barr virus. Some individuals will develop an autoimmune disease immediately following mono.
Are there any other clear infections in addition to the EBV that you've seen as common infections in those with autoimmunity?
Right. So very clear connections with Yersinia, Enterocolitica in the gut, the flu, Lyme disease, cytomegalovirus, herpes 6, and H. pylori is another big one.
How are you identifying those in your clinic? Are you going for the specific infection, or are you also looking for the condition in which the infection manifested? How do you approach this clinically when we're talking about infection and autoimmunity?
Right. So a big part of it is just based on the patient history. And then the second part is how each infection manifests in the body regarding signs and symptoms and the age of onset. And then definitely we would test directly for the infection based on just basically based on what all the literature shows up to this point. There are specific microbes that are connected with specific autoimmune diseases.
And are you looking for that targeted infection? Like, are you doing a battery of tests to determine, is this EBV? Is it active EBV? Is it Yersinia? Are you looking for that in specificity?
Yes, definitely looking for it specifically, mainly through just standard blood testing and stool analyses. We'll pick up the vast majority of the infections.
Let's just talk about this connection a little bit more. I know you really have spent a lot of time looking into this connection between infections and autoimmunity. Can you draw that connection out for us a little bit?
The first connection was discovered in 1972, where researchers found a connection between cytomegalovirus and lupus. Now, at this point, there are approximately six different models of how infections trigger autoimmunity. One of the most popular ones is molecular mimicry. So one example would be Yersinia enterocolitica. The surface proteins of Yersinia, so proteins have specific amino acid sequences, and that's how the immune system reads these things. Now, Yersinia amino acid sequences look very similar to thyroid tissue.
Right.
So the immune system makes antibodies against Yersinia and thyroid tissue. So that's one very popular, well-established infection connection.
What are some of the other connections that you've seen that are worth practitioners being aware of?
Well, regarding viruses, Epstein-Barr and herpes 6 are pretty big with autoimmune thyroid disease. And Epstein-Barr, just in general, is connected to many autoimmune diseases.
Right.
H. pylori, strong connections with Graves' disease. And there's so many autoimmune diseases,
right,
so many infections. There are connections there with all of those.
Can you speak a little bit into the issue of active versus non-active viral infections? I think when we're looking at IgG versus IgM antibodies, this is a question that I find the practitioners I train often get confused about. So when you're looking at a viral infection and testing for it, what does that indicate for you when you see different antibody production?
So this is a very clear answer, and it depends on the infection. So IgM only hangs around for, on average, about 7 weeks. So we can't necessarily use that for reactivation. Epstein-Barr virus, for example, you're looking at the IgG early antigen, the nuclear antigen, and the viral capsid antigen. Those are just going to be positive for life. So you're really looking at the early antigen IgG. So cytomegalovirus is different. There's just IgG and IgM. And then you can also do PCR testing for viruses. And herpes 6, there's just no good test currently available to measure reactivation in adults. The IgM is completely unreliable. So that's one example of, there's actually no way to test for reactivation in herpes 6. But you'll know if the IgM is positive, that you know it's happened within the last 7 weeks.
Right. That's so interesting. And I kind of love that your answer to my question is, it depends, because I'm always using that as my favorite answer. So in this case, it really does depend on the particular infection. But certainly with the EBV, the IgM antibodies are showing us a more active infection. When I see highly elevated IgGs, even if the IgMs are low, I'm often making clinical associations about why the whole immune system is so active anyway. Even if we haven't targeted the infection, are there ways that you're starting to see that the terrain, for instance, needs to be calmed down, mediated, so to speak?
Mm-hmm. In those IgG elevations, all they're telling you is that there's some kind of immune challenge,
right,
with the patient. And most practitioners are banging their heads against the wall trying to deactivate these viruses. And there's just so many other things that you have to do other than just targeting the infection itself.
I couldn't agree more. Can you speak into what those other things are that you might be doing in an inflamed state where you are hunting for the particular infection?
Yeah, so this answer may surprise some people because I'm not going to give the usual gut and stress and things like that. One of the things to really look at is early adverse life events. And you'll find a clear connection between major stress, traumas as a child, and difficulty with these infections and more inflammation as an adult. So we know that the more adversity a kid goes through, the higher their C-reactive protein and inflammatory cytokines can be as adults. And that'll make it very difficult to treat the infection. So I tend to refer out a lot for things like somatic experiencing and cognitive behavioral therapy, EMDR, and things like that. And that gives us the best results when people are working on those issues.
I'm so glad you brought that up. Our final episode of the year will be focused on the ACEs, and I think the ACEs in conjunction with autoimmunity are a really profound connection. And one of my friends and favorite authors, Donna Jackson Nakazawa, speaks about this in her book, Childhood Disrupted. And there's a tremendous amount of research on the subject. So I'm glad you brought that up. It's key. And I think when we're looking through a functional lens, we need to be thinking about all aspects of a person's history, not just their physiological or the appearance of their clinical history. What else, when we're thinking about this connection between autoimmunity and infection, might you be seeing that a lot of other clinicians are missing?
Well, elevated estrogen is one example of something that will inhibit the body's ability to really deal with Epstein-Barr virus. So we have to trace the reasons for the elevated estrogen. And so that could be thyroid or gut and things like that. Sleep is a lot of practitioners address sleep, but not really as deeply as they should.
Right.
You have no chance of really getting someone over these infections unless their sleep is 110% ideal. So that's another big one that I focus on quite a bit.
Beautiful. When we move around the central part of the functional nutrition matrix, are you seeing other factors, whether they be detoxification issues, mitochondrial damage, environmental inputs, even structural issues that are impairing a person's ability to fight that infection and therefore address or manage their autoimmune condition?
Definitely mitochondrial dysfunction and protein deficiency, abnormal branched chain amino acid metabolism. So one example would be rickettsia, which is a tick-borne or a vector-borne infection. And rickettsia is an ATP parasite. So it hangs out in the cell right next to the mitochondria and just feeds off of that. So yeah, we'll see tremendous uncoupling of the mitochondria, like on the organic acid tests in a lot of these patients.
Right. Are people coming to you, Dr. Hedberg, having been everywhere and done everything? I mean, this is who we see in our practice. And oftentimes the dysfunction hasn't been identified. And even if it is, the system's just so impaired. And it's sort of chicken and egg. Like a chronic infection is going to lead to stress, the impairment of the mitochondria, the breakdown of the mucosal barrier, and then it just kind of cascades from there. So do you have a system by which you approach working with these complex cases?
I definitely focus on what I mentioned earlier, trauma history, and just absolutely trying to identify all the sources of stress in one's life. So the big things that people, I would say, overlook are having a meaningful purpose in life. If people really truly do like their jobs, or if they hate their jobs, their relationships. And then I ask people to look at the five people they spend the most amount of time with, and if they're healthy and positive and uplifting, or are they people that just talk about their health problems all the time? So a lot of times the system begins without really doing much so-called functional medicine.
Right. Is there one big takeaway from your book that you would share with practitioners that A, would make them want to run out and get it, but B, also just give us something else to chew on in relation to this connection between infection and autoimmunity?
Right. I mean, the biggest thing I would say is that don't work too hard on the infection. You definitely want to address it, but don't forget about all the other things that you need to work on that could be contributing to the immune challenges. And the other thing would be not falling into any particular system or protocol or agenda with each patient based on the results you get with other patients. Just keep a really broad look at everything that you're doing and don't get stuck into one particular protocol or system.
Bravo. I love that. It keeps us broad while also looking at the unique individual. Thank you so much for talking about this topic today, Dr. Hedberg. It's an important connection that more of us have to make.
Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
The 15-Minute Matrix is brought to you by me, Andrea Nakayama, and the Functional Nutrition Alliance. The 15-Minute Matrix team includes my son, Gilbert Nakayama, on sound production, Renee Hunt, Natalie Merrill, and Christine Shook. You can visit us and hear more episodes at 15minutematrix.com. And if you'd like to get a notification each time there is a new podcast episode ready, please go to 15minutematrix.com/notify. We will drop into your inbox with a really short reminder that a new episode is ready and waiting for you. Plus, I always welcome your emails. I want to know who you'd like to hear on the podcast, what topics you'd like to hear discussed and mapped on the 15-Minute Matrix, and how you're liking the podcast so far. You can always email us anytime, day or night, at ask@15minutematrix.com. That's ask@15minutematrix.com.